talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Here's Johnny.
Just looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
You can't handle the truth.
Say hello to my little friend.
We are Movie Geeks. Welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And we're here to talk about movies because that's what we do. Today is, what is it, Jim?
July 6th.
July 6th. Oh, my gosh. The time just gets away from you.
It's the holiday weekend.
Yes.
That's right. Oh, it was the big 4th of July weekend. I wonder what happened at the box office over the weekend, Michelle.
huge things. Domestically, Jurassic World was number one. However, Terminator Genesis was number one worldwide at the box office. With that, the international performance is crucial, probably, for Genesis. Paramount Pictures and Skydance spent $155 million on the fifth Terminator, with two more entries coming in 2016 and 2017.
Oh, good.
So
I hope they bring back J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, he was the best part. So at the domestic box office, we had number one was Jurassic World with $30.9 million. Number two was Inside Out from Disney, still hanging in there. Number three was Terminator Genesis. Four was Magic Mike with $12.0 million. Ted 2 was from Universal at $11 million.
Okay. Yeah, there was some talk that that Inside Out, I think you predicted that maybe last week, Tom, that Inside Out would do a flip-flop and be number one. And I was reading reports over the weekend, and it seemed like everyone was thinking that. But I guess in the final run, Jurassic World snuck in there and retained the number one spot.
It was
spot,
close.
Right?
And then Terminator wasn't too far behind either.
Yeah, so, I mean, sure they were expecting it to be number one or hoping it would be, but...
Magic Mike didn't do so well.
No.
Well, that's a real specialized audience there.
Of which I'm not a member of. I probably won't end up not seeing that. We all saw Terminator Genesis. Michael Hafner reviewed it at wearemoviegeeks.com and only gave it 1.5 stars. Michael, what were you thinking? I liked it quite a bit.
I liked it quite a bit myself.
Jim, did you like it?
I will dissent. I will not dislike it as much as Michael. I would give it maybe 2.5 or 3 stars, but the first maybe 45 minutes is a lot of fun, getting to see, modern day Arnold go up against his 84 self.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, all the time jumping, it's like, oh, we're going to 97, we're going to 2017, we got to do this, oh, here's John Connor, oh, he's like, made of black metal magnetic sand now, and it was just way too much, it just got too convoluted. And fun to see Arnold kind of in his wheelhouse again.
That was fun,
recreating his iconic role. But the rest of it, I didn't think that Emilia Clarke or Jay Courtney were adequate replacements for Linda Hamilton and Michael Biehn.
I think Emilia Clarke actually looked a bit like Linda Hamilton in some shots.
A few shots, but I think Linda was better, especially in the second Terminator
She's iconic. I think what they did with this new film is, Terminator Salvation from a few years ago. Nobody liked that movie, so they went the exact opposite track. Terminator Salvation took place in the future. They had these giant Transformer-type robots. It was very serious.
Arnold.
Yeah, no Arnold. And in this one, they went the opposite direction. They sort of embraced the familiar. They actually recreated favorite scenes from the very first movie. They brought back the T-1000 more or less. It was an Asian actor, but he was a cop and he was doing the exact same things the T-1000 did in part two. They gave Arnold all these funny lines, the whole thing where she's trying to make him smile and he does this goofy grin. I mean, that was just like catnip to Terminator fans. I agree that it did get a little convoluted in the second half. But still, I thought it was a heck of a lot of fun.
It was the casting. It was the casting that was a lot of the problem. Not so much Emilia Clarke, but I had a problem with Jason Clarke being cast and Hi Courtney. Who would Jason Clarke? I'm fine.
Yeah.
Who would follow him? Never mind. Viewers were put off that he was turned into a Terminator. And Hi Courtney is no Michael Biehn. I mean, Michael Biehn in 1984 was smoking hot.
Yeah, but I don't know if any actor could have been plugged into that role.
They needed bigger actors, though. They needed
bigger names.
They needed bigger names. They needed both bigger stars, not these two lumps of clay. I'm sorry. The first movie was a straight horror film. Now these last couple films have been turned into like sci-fi movies, because the first one is pretty much a slasher movie when you get right to it. But it is kind of fun. They just need to figure out how to do a Terminator movie without Arnold. And you know, and without James Cameron, I mean, without Cameron, you know, at the helm, it seems the first two. After the first two, it seems kind of pointless.
Yeah, you got to love this character played by J.K. Simmons, though.
I loved him.
Oh, sure.
He plays a different actor plays a young cop in 1984, and then it jumps ahead, I guess, 30 or 40 years, and then J.K. Simmons, who's an actor in his 60s, is playing that same cop who had witnessed things going on decades earlier. Mm-hmm. And he's really good, and he's really funny. I even wish they had brought that character in earlier somehow and given him even made that part even bigger. I hope they bring him back for the sequels.
Yeah. I was going to say, he kind of injected some life in it, because by the time he was in there, my eyes were starting to glaze over from all the time jumping. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, it made the time jumping in Back to the Future 2 seem like nothing. You know, mm-hmm. It was like, oh, this is just way too confusing and way too much.
But see, so that begs the question. Is the problem because it's become a blockbuster? The franchise, each one, everyone's expecting it to be a blockbuster. Could they go back to kind of like the original where it was a low budget?
No, we've gone past that.
It
doesn't work that way.
No. I'm just throwing it out there because...
Yeah. Well, in the old days, I always go back to the original Planet of the Apes from 68.
Exactly.
And each sequel, I think, became cheaper and you know, more of a B movie.
Yeah,
they don't do that
these days.
No, they go the opposite direction. They came close with Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah.
But now they're back on track to it being a blockbuster.
Right. Mm-hmm. With a reboot.
Yeah. You know, Jim didn't like it so much, but as far as sci-fi goes, there's another science fiction movie opening later this week that Jim and I have seen. It makes Terminator Genisys look like 2001 A Space Odyssey. It is called Selfless. It stars Kingsley and Ryan Reynolds.
Do you feel immortal? We offer humanity's greatest minds more time to fulfill their potential. Designed to offer you the very best of the human experience.
It's alive.
An empty vessel.
If we do this, there's no turning back.
Now, Ben's got a fairly small part. It's
true.
Mostly Ryan.
True.
So I gotta say that.
The premise is that Ben is old and very sick, and he wants to basically transfer his mind into the body of a younger man. So he does so, and he wakes up, and he's Ryan Reynolds.
Not a bad trade-off, I'm going
to
say.
No. There was a movie made in 1963 called Seconds that we talked about last week that basically has the same premise. I think it was an actor named John Randolph. He wakes up and he's in the body of Rock Hudson, although I think that was more of an elaborate plastic surgery.
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe this is closer to, what is it called, Sorcerers with Boris Karloff and
the Sorcerers.
Ogilvy?
Yeah, that's right.
A little bit closer to that. Well, except I think Karloff and his wife are kind of seeing things through young
man's body. And they're sort of controlling the young man's body.
Yeah.
But in Seconds, I mean, it had the same basic premise, but then he spent the whole movie sort of, you know, dealing with his new life and the regrets about his old life and maybe thinking about reaching out to people in his original life. And it's very, you know, existentially gets in with this arty crowd. But there's this shadowy organization that's sort of watching him this whole time. And that's what you have in The Selfless as well. But The Selfless, I mean, that whole thing, like in Seconds, is the first 10 minutes. There's a kind of a nice scene where he wakes up and he picks up a young woman. He takes her to bed and he's sort of contemplating on sleeping with a young woman in this new young body, and that's sort of good. But then it goes off the rails at about the 15-minute point.
Well, I tell you, you talk about the shadowy organization.
Yeah.
I should say that Matthew Good from Hush was the name of the film he was in? He was
in Stoker.
Stoker, that was it. And, you know, plus I think he was in The Watchmen, and he's been kicking around for a little bit. He had a small role in The Imitation Game. But here, you know, he's sinister from the get-go.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, they're playing their hand too early because you know this guy is trouble the first time he meets Ben Kingsley.
Yeah, and then he takes Ben Kingsley into the lab and he shows him this human that he's going to transfer his soul into. And Ben Kingsley goes, "Hey, where do you get these humans?" And Matthew Goody goes, "We grow them in our lab." I think they have the technology to grow these humans. They might have been able to cure this disease that he had.
This is given away in the trailer,
too.
Oh, yeah. We're not doing spoilers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like I say, it turns into this shootouts, confrontations, car chases.
Clumsily done shootouts,
yeah,
too.
Poorly made.
Yeah.
There's a scene, we were making fun of this last week, where he's supposed to take this red pill every day so his mind doesn't fade. So, which is ridiculous, because if he misses one day, then all of a sudden he gets this, these sort of images of what his real life is like. And so he tracks down the wife of the body he's in, and he goes over to her house, and this is like 15 minutes in, and then these shadowy guys suddenly show up at the doorstep. I think it's that moment that the movie just took a dive off a cliff and it never recovered.
Oh, yeah. It just got, you know, went right to silly town.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think Rock Hudson was ever manning a flamethrower, was he?
No, yeah. I don't think so. No, we should say that the old body, or that the new body that Ben Kingsley's in, it turns out he's was a soldier and all that. Yeah. So that's how he's able to get in there and fight these guys right away. Otherwise, you'd be going, well, how does Ben Kingsley know all this stuff?
Yeah.
So then why is Ryan Reynolds in this? I mean, he's kind of past this. Ben Kingsley, fine. But
I guess a paycheck.
Needed a mortgage payment. I mean,
a
boat.
Being in a film with Ben Kingsley.
It's really bad. And we mentioned that the action scenes were poorly directed. This director, do you know his name?
Tarsem Karsim?
He did Immortals.
Yeah, he did Immortals, and he did a movie called The Cell, which
did Mirror Mirror a couple of years ago.
But Mirror Mirror was sort of visually interesting, and The Cell had some amazing visuals and some effects.
So it's not an unknown.
No, but in this movie, even the special effects are really terrible. I think when he's starting to lose his mind, his face sort of flickers back and forth a little bit. It's just like, 25-year-old technology or something.
What did we say last week? He looks like he's looking through a lava lamp at people because they're all kind of contorting and bubbling and shifting. Yes.
Before he pulls out the flamethrower again. It's just terrible.
And Victor Garber gets dragged into this. He doesn't need this.
But I will say in his defense, I mean, we talked last week about different kinds of bad movies, and there's boring bad like 50 Shades of Grey. And there's the sort of smug, precious indie like Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. And then there's movies like The Boy Next Door that are kind of fun to make fun of. And I think this movie, Selfless, sort of falls in that category. I did have sort of fun. We're having fun right now making fun of it. I saw it with my 15-year-old daughter, and we laughed about it all the way home. So it's not a boring movie.
Yeah, I think Boy Next Door is more fun, as a bad movie. But this is certainly not a thing that you just can't get through, that's for certain.
Okay, so we do not recommend Selfless. You can look. I'm actually reviewing that. You can see my more detailed review this Friday at wearemoviegeeks.com. The other movie that we saw over the weekend was The Overnight.
Hello. You new around here?
We just moved here from Seattle.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Wow. Max has really taken a shine to your boy. Tonight is our regular pizza night. We could turn it into a welcome the neighborhood get together. Huh. It could be fun. Want a Whole Foods now? Any dietary restrictions?
I don't think so.
Screw it. You guys, I'm so excited. Yay!
All right.
The Overnight is playing over at the Tivoli. You reviewed The Overnight and you liked it.
I liked it pretty much.
What'd you give it?
I think I gave it maybe, three and a half, something like that? Yeah. That's mostly affection for the actors involved in it. And I enjoy Adam Scott. I'm getting to like Taylor Schilling. I'm one of the few people that's not watching Orange is the New Black on Netflix, so maybe I should check that out sometime. And Jason Schwartzman is kind of an interesting, character. Yeah. He's been in some nice quirky flicks. But Selfless, it kind of shows its hand a little soon there, because there's I don't know how you felt what the first meeting with Schwartzman and the couple there, that played by Taylor and Adam. He's a little off already. I think I said in my review he's like a hipster Pied Piper or something, or a hipster Willy Wonka. He's dressed in this almost like a Hasidic uniform or something without the curls or something. Yeah. And he's coming up and he's joking with them. And then once they do get to his place, you meet the French bombshell wife. Yeah. Something's going on there. Yeah. And some of it takes some interesting turns.
Yeah,
but it's really like a quirky and your typical quirky, and you can see it playing at Sundance or something like
that. It is. I liked it too. I would have probably given it 3 out of 5. I think it had some good acting and some interesting characters. My big problem, I just wish it had been funnier. I mean, you watched it as a DVD screener. I actually saw it in a theater full of people, and nobody really laughed, except there was some nervous laughter. It's sort of an uncomfortable and sort of icky, for lack of a better word, comedy. They've got the whole thing with the subject of his paintings, which I won't go into. her breast milk fetish videos that they're making.
Yeah, that's an interesting introduction to someone. You said, oh, you pop in this movie they were in, and all of a sudden you're seeing that.
And then there's, of course, the now infamous penis size scene that goes on and on and on. Won't go into too many details on that, but I think that's the scene that people are going to be talking about. But it's like 75 minutes long.
Yeah. When I saw the 78-minute ring, I was like, really? And it kind of conveys that feel of you're at an all-night party. Mm-hmm. You know, by the end of it, they're kind of dragging a little bit, and inhibitions get loosened even more somehow.
It's got that sort of loose, sort of improv-y quality about it. I think it was produced by the Duplass brothers.
It plays
like some of their films.
It didn't feel like lousy improv like the Magic Mike films are known for. I think they kind of knew where they were going and a little better at it. Well, Adam Scott is a terrific comic actor, so I can see that. Jason Schwartzman is too, and their scenes together are very good. But there is. I think in my review and several reviews I've seen, kind of say that it kind of harkens back to, or tips its hat to, Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, and it's not quite up to that standard, but it's kind of interesting.
Neither of those actresses are any Natalie Wood. Or Diane Cannon, for that matter.
Yeah. I wasn't familiar with the French actress.
I wasn't familiar with the other actress that you mentioned. She's on Orange is the New Black, apparently.
Yeah, she did one of those Nicholas Sparks movies a couple of years ago, the lucky one with Zac Efron.
I didn't think she had a whole lot of big screen presence. She seemed like a TV actress. She looked like a lot of other actresses.
Yeah. Well, she was usually the cut to, when something would happen, they'd cut to her and she'd be mortified or embarrassed or something like that.
And she's the one that doesn't do any nudity.
No. The only one.
She has to stick with her TV career, I guess.
But I love the scene where Schwartzman's character says, the party's not going to end. We're under French rules. And he said, your kid can sleep over here and, we can continue to party. And that whole scene where he's sitting up and putting the kids to sleep is very entertaining to me. He's like, he puts on the star background and everything. It's pretty, pretty funny.
So it's an interesting movie worth seeing. I don't know if I'd recommend a night out to go see that movie, but maybe when it's on Netflix or something.
The Dollar Box.
Or something like that. We recommend it. Another movie that opens in limited release is this documentary about Amy Winehouse called Amy.
She was highly intelligent, the most intelligent person I knew.
She was so utterly authentic.
Amy, just give us a smile and then we can turn the camera off.
Do you promise?
Jim has seen it. What do you think, Jim?
Oh, I'm a lucky fellow for having seen it. I think it's a terrific, terrific documentary. I'm not familiar with the director's previous work. I believe he got a lot of good reviews for a film called Senna about the race car driver. Yeah. I heard that was very good. Did you see it, Tom?
I did not.
He's very good. Now, he's kind of taking a unique approach to this documentary. It's not the standard, this happened, talking head, person talking about it, whatever. It's all pretty much assembled from home movie footage, lots of home video footage, a lot of news footage there, a lot of TV broadcast performances and things like that. And it's really fascinating. I must admit, I'm not much of a music guy. Mm-hmm. I was just really familiar with her as the singer of the Rehab song. They wanted me to go rehab. I said, no, I think is how it goes. Mm-hmm. And that, and sort of the kind of caricature she kind of became towards the end of her career, with the big, beehive hair and the makeup and all the stuff in the tabloids about her overindulgence and substance abuse and that sort of thing.
What's the takeaway? How does the film portray her?
Very sympathetic. It actually starts in 2003, when she's this sweet kid right out of high school almost. She's running around going to gigs with her then manager, and she's having to sleep in the back of the car, and she's all snuggled under a blanket, and she's really cute. What's interesting is when they show her performing, they actually have the lyrics on screen with her, sort of animated next to her, which really helps quite a bit. And I wasn't aware that she has written most of her material, which is just amazing. And what a voice! And this tells you again, McDonald, she's more than what you saw in the tabloids and in the press and all that. She was really a fascinating, a great voice, a great entertainer. There's some terrific moments in it. There's an early interview with her where you see her playful side. She's being interviewed by someone off camera. Mm-hmm. And as the interviewer starts droning on and on about Dido, you can almost see Amy roll her eyes. Mm-hmm. It's really entertaining.
Do they have footage of her strung out on heroin?
Well, they have a lot of that sort of footage. She just, I don't know, you get depression. She just got involved with some really bad people. Yeah. But the people that should have been caring about her weren't. I mean, there's a couple of, I don't know if it's lawsuits yet, but there's some controversy with Amy's father, Mitch, and a couple of other people. I think her former boyfriend and all that.
What about her death? How was her death covered?
It's very sad. You know, they show the... Well, they show you the footage at a concert, I think, in Eastern Europe, where she wouldn't perform at all. She's just kind of trying to hide away like a little mouse in the in the corner of a kitchen. But what really you come away with, one of the big controversies is when she first started indulging in stuff other than booze or an occasional, you know, weed or something like that. She started to get into the crack cocaine, and her friend says, we have to do something. And Amy said, well, I'll only do it if my dad says so. And in the film, you hear him saying, well, she doesn't need to go to rehab. And he and Mitch insisted, he said, well, I just doesn't need to go to rehab now. Mm. Like that one word means so much. And I was like, if I had a daughter and her friends were saying that she's doing this, I wouldn't care about, you know, getting her in the recording studio or getting her in the concerts. I would get her some help. Huh. You know, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it sounds good. That's Amy. It's getting a lot of acclaim, and it opens, I think, this Friday in St. Louis.
Yeah, it'll be I think it could be a contender for Best Documentary of the Year come Oscar time, unless we see some really good documentaries in the next 4 months. Yeah.
Well, it opened up July 1st, July 2nd, in New York, L.A., limited release, and it did really well. I mean, it had one of the strongest limited opening releases with 220,000 at six locations. So that bodes well.
I mean, you know, at the end of a chill, they actually have footage of, you know, Jay Leno and George Lopez doing these really crass jokes about her. I'm like, and somebody in you know, one of the voiceover people says, so when did it be okay to make fun of somebody having problems like this? You know, so it's really, really well done.
Good, something to look forward to. A couple other movies that opened this week. We're seeing one tonight. It's called The Gallows. It's a horror film. It's rated PG-13. I think it's about a high school play that goes terribly wrong and somebody comes back from the dead or something.
That's getting some good buzz already. The early word says for found footage horror movie, it's good. It's entertaining.
Senior Charlie Grimmel died after a prop malfunction during the high school's presentation of The Gallows.
What's going on?
There's no tape in here.
Someone died in the school?
But it is PG-13.
It is PG-13.
True.
But I did read something interesting. I wasn't aware of it until I read it in Entertainment Weekly. One of the stars of it is actually Cassidy Gifford, I guess is her name.
Yes.
Cassidy Lee's daughter. Yeah. Right. Oh, that's kind of interesting.
I wish it was rated R, too, but I call him as I see him. I sort of enjoyed Unfriended earlier this year, and I think that was PG-13.
That was a really nice surprise, yeah.
We'll see.
We'll be back next week with a review of that. Yeah. And then tomorrow night we're seeing Minions. Minions is, of course, the third, I guess Despicable movie, but it does not have Gru. It has
Sandra Bullock.
And then I think John Hamm is her sidekick.
Minions. Minions have been on this planet far longer than we have. They go by many names. Dave, Carl... Oh, that one is Norbert. He's an idiot.
Universal's they've already opened it overseas. It's doing blockbuster numbers overseas already. So,
well, the first two are really funny. And this is a prequel, isn't it?
Because it shows them being minions to Napoleon and Count Dracula.
That's right. Those are hilarious, too. They do a surprise birthday party for Count Dracula, and they open the window when he turns to dust.
I have some high hopes for that. I hope it'll be fun.
So that's Minions, and that opens this Friday. We'll have a more detailed opinion on that next Monday.
Oh, and Testament of Youth also opens this Friday, so I'll be seeing that this afternoon. Okay. So I hope it's good.
And that stars the gal from Ex Machina.
Yes, and the guy from Kit Harington, Jon Snow from Game of Thrones.
And Haley Atwell.
Oh, sweetie, that's Captain America's gal.
Yeah, it's a good cast.
Thank you.
was, of course, a track from Titanic, the great score by James Horner. James Horner died about less than 2 weeks ago. He was just 61 years old. He died in a private plane crash. Sad. He was at the top of his game, one of the great film composers of all time. Michelle, tell us a little bit more about James Horner.
He was a prolific, for our age, he was this prolific Oscar-winning composer, you know, and I was so sad to hear of his death, and it first hit Twitter, and then it just expanded from there. I grew up listening to his scores. His scores and his themes for the films were so emotionally rich, and he gave each film such spirit. We all know him from Braveheart and Aliens. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list goes on. Star Trek II, Apollo 13, Wolfen, Legends of the Fall. But I grew up, I was introduced to his music in a movie that he and James Cameron worked on, Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yeah,
from 1980. Lots of horns.
That was his first score.
Then he went on to do Crawl. And
a lot of action films.
And he and James Cameron both got their start with Roger Corman on Battle Beyond the Stars.
Everybody got their start with Roger Corman.
Exactly. Gail Ann Hurd. And, you know, that's, like I said, that's when I first noticed Horner. And then the two of them went on to collaborate with Aliens, Titanic, and Avatar.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, he only won two Academy Awards for Titanic
both
and for
Titanic,
the song,
yeah.
You Know, My Heart Goes On. So even though he received 8 additional Academy Award nominations, 5 additional Golden Globe nominations, and won 6 Grammy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was first introduced to him via Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
That's an amazing score.
Pretty much wore out my 33 record of it.
Thank you.
And then I started, when the internet started and Pandora, I started hearing some cuts from Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yep.
And it's kind of a warm-up for Wrath of Khan.
It is. It's because he went Battle Beyond the Stars, then Crawl, then Star Trek II, and they have these loud, you know, these booming loud horn sections with kind of that became his music, his instrument to go to. And I also like that he worked with Ron Howard on 2 movies. One of my favorites, Apollo 13. And then A Beautiful Mind, which won Best Picture, but he did not win Best Score.
He also scored Ron Howard's Willow.
And Willow.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
And thinking about his comic book
And wait a minute.
There.
And The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't realize that. But
and Ransom. More Ron Howard movies.
So Ron Howard and James Cameron were his go-to collaborators.
Exactly.
Mostly,
and The Missing.
And The Missing.
Ron Howard's movie. Wasn't that with Tommy Lee Jones?
Tommy Lee Jones, yeah. I really, and Cate Blanchett, I believe.
That's right.
But, I think my favorite of his is Wrath of Khan, of course. But
yeah, that's
The Rocketeer is a great score.
Isn't it a great score?
Terrific movie in general, but his score hit when the Rocketeer is finally taking flight. It's just spectacular, and it's interesting that James Horner himself, you know, loved to fly, and you know it's a tragic what happened, but you could kind of you could hear his love of flying in that score to Rocketeer. It's wonderful, and I had thought he'd pretty much bowed out from scoring films after Avatar, but looking over, I guess his last film was Amazing Spider-Man, the very first.
Actually, his last film was Southpaw.
Yeah, he's got Southpaw coming up.
Oh, he has that coming out. Okay, okay.
And you wonder if maybe it'll get an Oscar nom. There's going to be some emotion with the Academy, and maybe they'll give them an Oscar nom for that.
Yeah.
It
depends how good the score
well
is, of course.
But when back in 1986, when Aliens came out, and that score... I mean, for a few years afterwards, every trailer that would come out would have the music from Aliens with it. If it was an action movie, boy, did that music, did that score make that film.
Got more play than Bad to the Bone, huh?
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. So, but no, they're saying his agent and publishers said Wolf Totem, The 33, and South Park are his last scores.
Hmm.
Wolf Totem, you say?
Yes.
And the 33?
The 33.
Yeah, I have a feeling a Southpaw's score will probably be one of those kind of subtle ones. At least that's the thing I'm getting from the trailer. I doubt if it'll be one of his sweeping scores that we're most familiar with from like, say, Rocketeer and things like that and Avatar.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the Hollywood Tribune had a tribute to Horner that was penned by James Cameron. It's on, part of it's on our site, and you can read the full thing at the Hollywood Reporter. And it's a beautiful tribute by Cameron to the composer.
So go out and buy some James Horner soundtrack CDs.
Or find it on YouTube.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I have the compilation at home. I think it's called Heart of the Ocean.
Oh, yeah.
That's got about 10 or 12 of his best scores. That's worth checking out or they're seeking out.
And Wolfen and 48 that's Hours. Right.
Yeah.
Another, it was kind of in the 80s. He was very much into the marimbas during that time. Sad to see him go.
Yeah.
Very sad. And Braveheart and Apollo 13 were both released the same year, and they were both Best Picture. They both, and I believe he lost to El Postino.
That's right.
But,
so RIP, James Horner. Comic-Con is coming up. And Melissa in California will be covering that?
Yep, Melissa Howland will be covering that for us.
What's going on at Comic-Con this year?
The three big standouts, Deadpool, which just received hard R rating. They're not saying it's only R. Yeah. It's a hard R.
Oh, yeah.
Deadpool is a super villain.
Yeah, he's a spinoff from the X-Men series, so this will be from Fox. It'll not be from Marvel Studios.
And he was a villain in the first Wolverine film, I believe.
At the very end, you got to see a little taste of him. Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
And he was played by Ryan Reynolds. He played by Ryan Reynolds in this new film?
Yes.
Oh, well, I hope
so. He's going to redeem himself.
That was better than Selfless.
Yes. He's going to redeem himself. So think of the premiere, the first trailer for that, or just the first footage?
No, probably the trailer. Yeah. They'll see some kind of footage.
And that'll open next summer? The movie Deadpool?
Oh, yeah. The photos that Ryan has been posting online have been hysterical.
Twitter and Facebook have just been all over this.
Very funny. You know, he has one picture of him on the toilet. Another one with him was holding a baby or something.
Remember a few years ago when Ryan Reynolds showed up at Comic-Con and did Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And did the whole, spiel.
Said, by brightest day, by darkest night.
When the little kid got it.
Oh,
yeah. That was great. Yeah.
What else is going on at Comic-Con?
Quentin Tarantino. We're finally going to see the first footage from The Hateful Eight.
Oh, goody.
Oh, I cannot wait. We just posted online this past week first stills, first images via Entertainment Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And the cast includes Kurt Russell, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Walter Goggins, Samuel L. Jackson, Damian Bashir, Tim Roth, Bruce Dern, Michael Madsen. Hateful Eight will be released during awards season,
Christmas Day,
70mm for 2 weeks, and then it will expand January 8th.
And you got to wonder, the way Tarantino writes, is such a great writer and writes such great characters, which of these eight are going to stand out? And you know one of them's going to get an Oscar nom.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, who's it going to be?
I mean,
and I hope they're not chewing the scenery trying to overact each other. I doubt Tarantino would let them do that.
I love seeing Michael Madsen back.
Back into an A picture,
But this is from Weinstein Films, and so they're, between that and Southpaw, they're gunning up for...
Well, Madsen's been a Tarantino regular.
Exactly.
But, Christoph Waltz isn't in this one.
No.
So that's, one person's not going to get nominated from it. So there you go.
But Tim Roth is, so I'm like, okay.
This is Tim's first time back since Pulp Fiction, maybe, I guess, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else he was in. And then Jennifer Jason Leigh, that's an interesting casting. The only female. I mean, she's my age. And she's never been nominated before.
Has she been in a Tarantino film before?
No.
It takes place six or eight or 12. The synopsis is really funny. Set 6 or 8 or 12 years after the Civil War, Stagecoach hurtles towards the wintry Wyoming landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of got that.
Well, I can't wait. That's probably the movie I'm most looking forward to in the rest of 2015. Anything else at Comic-Con?
Warner Brothers released that they will be there with Justice League. this Saturday coming up at 10:30 a.m. In the Hall H, the big Hall H. They're keen to deliver a taste of one of next year's most eagerly awaited pairings. Director Zack Snyder and stars Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill will take the main stage. They all, Amy Adams will be there, Jesse Eisenberg, Jeremy Irons, Holly Hunter, for a sneak peek. So those people will get their very first look at the video.
They're going to see some more scenes from Batman v Superman, and then maybe show some production art from Justice League or something.
Batman versus Superman: Dawn of Justice,
which could be called Justice League Zero because you know, we know that Wonder Woman is. We've seen the photo with Affleck and Gal Gadot, and we do know that there will be an appearance by Aquaman in it.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Who's playing Aquaman?
Jason Momoa.
Jason Momoa.
They're going to make a big appearance. They're the main selling point for Comic-Con since Marvel is taking a pass this year. Is it Marvel and Star Wars are not going to be there?
Pan will be there, a Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay, so look for our coverage of Comic-Con at wearemoviegeeks.com.
I'll be back.
That's, of course, the original Terminator from 1984, which will be playing midnights this weekend at the Tivoli. I host the Real Late at the Tivoli show every Friday and Saturday night at midnight at the Tivoli in St. Louis on Del Mar in the Loop. And we have just announced the upcoming midnight schedule. So that'll be pretty exciting.
It's a great lineup.
It is. It's very eclectic. It's a neat lineup. This past weekend we showed Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and we had a pretty nice crowd for that. I think a lot of people may be out there next weekend to see Terminator because they've seen Terminator Genesis and they're curious to experience the original Terminator on the big screen again. But we're going to announce the lineup for July through September here. This is sort of first time this has been revealed anywhere except at WeAreMovieGeeks.com, of course. July 24th and 25th, Jurassic Park, the original.
Now, this is the non-3D version. This will be the 2D version, right?
Yeah. I don't think they do 3D at the Tivoli.
Oh, I think they've done a couple of those Disney films in 3D. It's been about
Yeah, but last time that we did Jurassic Park at the Tivoli, it was packed. So I suspect that that's a good choice.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those films, if you can ever see it on the big screen, do.
And then July 31st and August 1st, and this is pretty exciting. I think this is the St. Louis event of the summer. It is The Room.
Did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
The Room with Tommy Wiseau in person. Tommy Wiseau is the director, star, and writer of The Room.
Why? Why is this happening to me? Why? God.
You guys haven't seen The Room, but The Room is pretty amazing. It really has supplanted Rocky Horror Picture Show as the interactive movie of the 21st century. People show up with props, and they throw plastic spoons at the screen, and I'm not going to go into why, because it wouldn't make any sense.
Well, I happened to catch part of it when they read it on April Fool's Day on the Cartoon Network, and I was like, this is some pretty wacky stuff.
Yeah, it's really funny.
You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
This guy, I've interviewed Tommy Wiseau. Actually, he called me for the interview, and he said, "This is Tommy Wiseau. You have 15 minutes of my time." And then an hour later, I said, "Tommy, I got to go. I got to make dinner for my kids." You know, I've interviewed him. I've seen interviews with him. I've seen his film. I've read about him, and I still am not sure if he's in on the joke or not.
Kind of like Ed Wood or something?
Yeah, kind of, without the alcohol.
And the cross-dressing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. It's just so bizarre, and the movie's just so terrible, and he hasn't done anything. That movie's made in 2003, so it's been 12 years since he made the film. He hasn't done anything. He tried some cable series that lasted a couple episodes. In fact, he's showing an episode of it before The Room. Don't miss The Room. Tickets are $15. It's going to sell out. Tommy was here a couple years ago, and both nights sold out. So
wow.
And he'll be out in the lobby of the Tivoli signing. Oh, he'll bring boxes of The Room posters and... He has this little dog that talks and says a Tommy saying in it, and he'll sign those. And last time we didn't even start the movie till about 1:30 because Tommy was out there signing it. He wanted to make sure everybody got an autograph. But that'll be a lot of fun.
Classic showman, sounds like.
July 31st, August 1st, The Room. August 7th and 8th, Zardoz. That's an interesting choice.
Wow. Oh, that is great. John Borman's film.
Yeah.
He made that after Lord of the Rings, the original Lord of the Rings that he was going to make fell through.
Zardoz speaks to you. His chosen ones, the gun is good.
But and Charlotte Rampling's in it, who I absolutely adore.
Yeah, this is after Deliverance also.
Oh, right? This was 77?
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe earlier. Maybe like 75. No, I take that back. It was 74.
Yeah.
And Sean Connery runs around in this red diaper, and there's this floating godhead. It really got terrible reviews when it first came out, but it's sort of got a cult following. People bring it up all the time.
Yeah, I recall first seeing the photos. I think it may have been in Cine Fantastic. Yeah. I remember that old magazine.
Yeah, it was a cover story.
Yeah, it was Famous Monsters had photos of it. We were like, oh, that's a science fiction film with Sean Connery. Yeah, we got to go see it. And we were like, went to see it. I was like, what was this about?
Yeah. But I'm glad they're showing it. We were talking about what makes a midnight movie, and we think it's a movie that they aim for the college age crowd. So a lot of times they'll look at a movie that's maybe 15 years old, that college students maybe saw when they were kids and they loved, and they'll bring it back, like Spice World they showed last year, and that had a big crowd, and I was like scratching my head over that one because I'm an old man. Mean Girls was another one that did really well. Jurassic Park I think will do well for the same reason. These people in their mid-20s saw it when they were kids and they love it. But when I was in college in the early 80s, I went to the midnight movies all the time, and you had things like Clockwork Orange was kind of a standard. The Graduate with Dustin Hoffman was played at midnights all the time. There was a Philip DeBroca movie called King of Hearts. Remember that?
Yeah,
Alan Bates.
Yeah.
I don't know what the heck has happened to that movie. You can't even find it anywhere. And they used to play midnights all the time, and it's just sort of been forgotten.
Genevieve Bujold.
What else? Night of the Living Dead. But that's everybody's seen that so many times.
Eraserhead, I guess.
Eraserhead. Yeah, that was made in 78. That used to play.
I remember Fantastic Planet played.
Yeah, I remember seeing that at the theater too. Really crude animation. I don't know how well that would hold up. But one of the movies that they always played was Harold and Maude.
Well, if you want to sing out, sing out. And if you want to be free, be free.
Harold?
Maude?
Did I tell you I'll be 80 on Saturday?
It's definitely a new experience for me.
Oh, yeah.
With Ruth Gordon and Bud Cort, and it was directed by Hal Ashby in 1971. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a cult classic. It's a must for fans. Yeah, and they released it a few years ago on Criterion, which I bought.
I did
and
too.
It's got the booklet.
It's got a commentary by a Hal Ashby biographer that's very interesting. That is on the new Tivoli schedule, which kind of surprised the heck out of me when I saw it. Oh. I hope a lot of people show up.
I bet that has a big turnout.
Maybe. It's kind of hard to predict. Sometimes I think movies that are going to get big crowds don't, and vice versa.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the hallmarks of 70s cinema, and I think 70s cinema are getting, it's getting a lot more respect now than used to. So, right. Yeah.
So that's September 11th and 12th. Backing up a little bit, though, The Wizard of Oz, 1939, is showing August 14th and 15th. Is that a movie people are going to want to go see at midnight? I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. Especially since it just came out of the 3D version a couple of years ago, and since it does get a lot of play still on the Turner TV stations.
They're actually showing that at noon on Saturday the 15th, so I bet more people are going to show up at noon. Bring their kids.
Yeah.
August 21st, 22nd is Space Jam. Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny. I've never seen Space Jam. I'm sure you have, Jim. Tell us about Space Jam.
Pardon me, Mr. Jordan. Could I have your your John Hancock?
What's going on here?
We need your help!
It's fun. It's kind of an outgrowth of those Nike commercials. And the animation, mostly by Eric Goldberg, is not too bad. I believe it's by Goldberg. He might have done the follow-up, which was Looney Tunes Back in
Action. I've seen that, and that was directed by Joe Dante.
That was.
But who directed Space Jam?
Pitka, I believe, who's the same fellow did the commercials originally.
Oh, okay.
I may be wrong about Goldberg, but the animation's not too bad, and the characterizations of the Looney Tunes characters are pretty good. Plus, you got Bill Murray thrown in there for good measure. So,
Duck.
Yeah.
You kick it in here. You go to the hole and dominate. We on defense.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
I don't play defense.
It's okay. It's a kind of a cute kid's flex, so it's not bad. Michael Jordan acquits himself well enough, so we'll see.
It was so big when it was released in 96. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I remember taking my older son, and, he was all about Space Jam.
Yeah.
We had Space Jam.
Yeah, a lot of merchandising,
sheets.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It has a great, it has a fun soundtrack and score.
And they're bringing back Bugs to do new spots for, I think, Mickey. Yeah.
Yep.
He and the Looney Tunes crew there, so.
They're probably not Michael Jordan.
No. Different ball player, I think. Yeah, definitely.
All right, so that's Space Jam, August 21st and 22nd. August 28th and 29th, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Indiana Jones is on the quest of a lifetime. But for some adventures, one Jones is not enough.
Dad? Junior? Don't call me that, please.
This was the third Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah, have they done? Sean, well, I know they've done Raiders as a midnight show. Did they do Temple of Doom?
I don't think so. I don't recall. I've been hosting the midnight show at the Tivoli for 6 or 7 years now, and no, I don't think they did Temple of Doom.
Yeah, you'd think that that would be a little more, since that's from '84 and it's got the short round in it. It'd be something that would play better at midnight. But
I think Crusade's a better film than
definitely. Sean Connery.
Sean Connery makes that film. Yeah. That's for sure.
Indiana Jones and the
That would have been a nice sign off for the Indiana Jones character. As opposed to what
you didn't like the Crystal Skull?
No.
Although we'll see what happens with the Chris Pratt rumors of him.
They got to bring back Shia LaBeouf. Come on. he's supposed to be the new Indiana Jones.
No.
Oh, come on.
It's going to be The Adventures of Mutt Williams.
Yeah. Shia LaBeouf doesn't get too much respect.
No, this would have been a nice,
send-off.
Well, that would have been a terrible... Crystal Skull would have been awful no matter who was playing that character. Yeah. You know, so he can't take the blame for that.
I like in The Last Crusade where he meets Hitler.
Yes.
So that's August 28th, 29th. September 4th and 5th is Spirited Away, which is going to... Every time we show a Miyazaki film,
we get
a big crowd. Yeah. And Spirited Away is considered Miyazaki's masterpiece.
Yep.
Yeah, although The Wind Rises is really good. So I might enjoy that a little bit more.
So that is the newly announced Tivoli Midnight lineup. Come check it out. I'm always there with custom written trivia questions about the films and prizes and popcorn and stuff to give away. So that is at the Tivoli. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for today's We Are Movie Geeks podcast. Next week, we'll give our opinions on The Gallows and Minions and a couple other things that may be opening.
Yeah, I'm going to see Trainwreck on Wednesday night, so maybe we can talk a little bit about that.
Amy Schumer.
She's hot right now. She had quite a profile yesterday on CBS Sunday Morning. So
these all the films this year with women, starring have done really well. They've been great movies and done really well at the box office.
All right, so check us out again next week. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Betts.
Signing off.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, darling. Hey,
hey, hey. Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling. Black leather, rock. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.